So we are on Exodus 14 today,
Yep.
and we'll start with prayer in a minute. Let's open in prayer. Father, thank you for your word, and we thank you for being with us now as we look into your word and look to you for our refreshing in the word. Feed us with your word. Increase our knowledge of you. That we might be better servants for you in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to start reading. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp before Pi-hahiroth between Migdol and the sea, before Baal-zephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea. Pharaoh will say of the Israelites, they are astray in the land and the wilderness. In the land, the wilderness is closed in on them. Then I will stiffen Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, that I may gain glory through Pharaoh and all his host. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord." And they did so. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his courtiers had a change of heart about the people and said, "What is this we have done, releasing Israel from our service?" He ordered his chariot and took his men with him. He took 600 of his picked chariots and the rest of the chariots of Egypt with officers in all of them. The Lord stiffened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he gave chase to the Israelites. As the Israelites were departing defiantly, the Egyptians gave chase to them, and all the chariot horses of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his warriors, overtook them and camped by the sea near Pi-hahiroth before Baal-zephon. As Pharaoh drew near, the Israelites caught sight of the Egyptians advancing upon them. Greatly frightened, the Israelites cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, "Was it for want of graves in Egypt that you brought us to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us, taking us out of Egypt? Is this not the very thing we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us be, and we will serve the Egyptians'? For it is better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." But Moses said to the people, "Have no fear. Stand by and witness the deliverance which the Lord will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will battle for you. You hold your peace." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the Israelites to go forward. And you lift up your rod and hold out your arm over the sea and split it so that the Israelites may march into the sea on dry ground. And I will stiffen the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his warriors, his chariots and his horsemen. Let the Egyptians know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." The angel of God, who had been going ahead of the Israelite army, now moved and followed behind them, and the pillar of cloud shifted from in front of them and took up a place behind them, and it came between the army of the Egyptians and the army of Israel. Thus there was the cloud with the darkness, and it cast a spell upon the night, so that the one could not come near the other all through the night. Then Moses held out his arm over the sea, and the Lord drove back the sea with a strong east wind all that night, and turned the sea into dry ground. The waters were split, and the Israelites went to the sea on dry ground, the waters forming a wall for them on the right hand and on the left. The Egyptians came in, pursued after them into the sea, all of Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and horsemen. At the morning watch, the Lord looked down upon the Egyptian army from a pillar of fire and cloud and threw the Egyptian army into panic. He locked the wheels of their chariots so that they moved forward with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the Israelites, for the Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Hold out your arm over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians and upon their chariots and upon their horsemen." Moses held out his arm over the sea, and at daybreak the sea returned to its normal state, and the Egyptians fled at its approach. But the Lord hurled the Egyptians into the sea. The waters turned back and covered the chariots and the horsemen, Pharaoh's entire army that followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the Israelites had marched through the sea on dry ground, the waters forming a wall for them on their right and on their left. Thus the Lord delivered Israel that day from the Egyptians. Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the shore of the sea. And when Israel saw the wondrous power which the Lord had wielded against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord. They had faith in the Lord and his servant Moses. Okay. I wanted to go back to the last chapter, the end of the last chapter, because there was one thing I was going to point out last time that I think is maybe relevant. Because I was looking at 1 Corinthians 10, and I'm going to get my New Testament here. And the reason I'm doing this, because I was thinking, well, we've been talking about symbolism and what how Exodus relates to the Christian experience, or at least as a type of it. And I may have mentioned this verse last time, but I wanted to read it again. It says, Paul says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And we're all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea." So he's comparing definitely the experience of the Red Sea to the Christian life, because he's saying we've had similar experiences. The baptism, all did eat the spiritual meat, did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased. For they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now, these things were our example to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, neither be idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed. My servants, neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Then in verse 13, after he talks about this, he says, "There is no temptation taking you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it." So I particularly want to, in the context of talking about Moses and the wilderness experience, he concludes with this passage about how God will not allow us to be tempted above that we're able. And in here, verse 17, from what we read last time. "Now, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of Philistines, although it was nearer. For God said the people may have a change of heart when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people round about by way of the wilderness at the Sea of Reeds."
Right.
If you look at a map, and I've got a map here because I've been doing some research on this. Can you see my screen with this? Let me share the screen. I think I have to do that first. So I'm going to go in here, share. Whoops, come on, you can do it. Maybe I can't.
No, you can.
Wait, I got to figure out how to do it. That's the only problem. Share screen. Oh, as soon as I wait a minute, there's got to be a settings or something down here.
Yeah, you just click on share screen.
There it is. Okay, cool. Then pull up the screen that I want, right? Okay, do you see the map? See up here where it says Way of Horus? That's also known as the Way of the Philistines. And it's a road that goes right into Jerusalem. It's definitely closer. The only problem is they'd have to go right through Philistine territory to get into the land, which means that they would be facing battle like the second day out on their journey. I
Right.
had no experience yet with, they didn't have the spiritual experience to be able to withstand that. God
Right.
knew that. And so he deliberately leads them the long way around. Now, this is not the traditional route. The traditional route, though, is all based on the fact that Constantine's wife decided that Mount Musa here was Mount Sinai. And there's no real reason to believe that. And so the traditionally people thought that they crossed somewhere, up here maybe, and walked down to Mount Sinai over here. I've seen this interpretation that's on the map here before, and it's very convincing. First of all, because Paul says that Mount Sinai is in Arabia. Are you familiar with the verse?
No.
It's in Acts. And I'm going to see if I can find, I'll have to look it up for you. But when he's talking about his conversion experience, let me look it up, because that's probably, I have my concordance here, so I will do it that way. And I'm just going to put Arabia in. Well, it's actually in Galatians, where Paul says, "For this Agar," meaning Hagar, "is Mount Sinai in Arabia."
Oh.
And he says that in Galatians 1, and also, "Neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, but I went into Arabia and returned again unto Damascus." So he's convinced it's in Arabia. The other thing that is very interesting is the Bible doesn't call the Old Testament in the Hebrew. It doesn't call the crossing area the Red Sea. It calls it Yom Suf, or traditionally that's. It's a little difficult to translate Suf, but they generally think it means Sea of Reeds. So people say, "Well, where's the Sea of Reeds?" And particularly modernist scholars say, "Well, it's marshland up here. So this, and reeds grow here. So this must be the, somewhere around here must be the Sea of Reeds. And there's a little lake here." And so they think, "Well, that must be where they crossed." And they really didn't cross the Red Sea. But here's the interesting thing. The Bible tells you where the Red Sea is, where Yam Suf is, rather. And I want to show you this. I'm going to go back to the regular one and go into First Kings, but I want to just get in Red Sea. And in First
I'm looking
Kings,
in Galatians, by the way. I don't
yeah.
see where it says that Mount Sinai is Arabia.
What does it say?
I mean, I see verse 17,
Yeah.
which says, "Nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went to Arabia and
Yeah.
returned to Damascus."
Yeah.
That's not Mount Sinai.
It says that in verse 1, doesn't it? Wait a
No.
minute. I'm going to have to go back to Sinai. I'll show you what I mean. He says, all right, Sinai. Let me go to, damn. Okay, hold on a minute. I'll find it. It's in here. Maybe I'm getting confused here, but I'm having trouble. I see what you're saying, I think. Galatians 4:25. Now, for this, Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He's saying Mount Sinai is in Arabia.
Oh, I see.
And I'm just saying, and then one, he says he went into Arabia and returned to Damascus. No, it doesn't say that he went to Mount Sinai. It just says
I
he
see.
went to Arabia.
Yeah, 25 does say that.
Yeah.
Is
Okay.
Mount Sinai in Arabia? Okay. I
Right.
looked at the wrong verse. All right.
So I'm going to go back to what was I looking for?
The Red Sea.
Red Sea. Yeah. This is cool. In 1 Kings 9, it says, "And King Solomon made a navy of ships in Ezion-Geber, which is beside Elot, on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom." And that Red Sea is Yom Suf. Now we know where Eilat is. It's modern day Eilat, and it's right here. It's Ezion-Geber on the map, which is what he says. Made a navy in sh of ships in Ezion-Geber. So that's Yom Suf. This whole body, this it's not of in any marsh in Egypt. I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious. And I think there was another one in it says in Deuteronomy 1:1, "These be the words which Moses spake unto all Israel on this side Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain over against the Red Sea, between Paran, Tophel, Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizhab." The Red Sea is on this side of Jordan in the wilderness. It can't be here. It
Right.
has to be here.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty clear that this is probably more likely the route. And these are, granted, these names are, or locations are somewhat, they're not absolute, but his reconstruction would show them coming all the way down and then going up to Etam, which it says in verse 20, they set out from Succoth and encamped at Etam. Well, he's got pictures of where of this area here, which is where he believes Etam is. And if you can see, do you see this map now again? Okay. Do you see all these mountains? It's sort of like a topographical map,
Yep.
this whole area here. These mountains go right down to the coast, right down to the sea. It's plains over here. So it's like God was leading them on this flat, like beachhead, all the way around the curve. They're coming up here and they run out of beach. And they can't go any further because you're either going to go in the water or you're going to go flat up against the mountain range.
Right.
This Migdal, this author that I was reading here, but he believes that was an Egyptian watchtower, like they had a garrison there. So they were aware of the movement of the Israelites because they controlled all of this area. Egypt controlled this whole area. And they probably reported back to Pharaoh and say, "Hey, they're running right up against the mountain range. There's no way they're going to be able to go anywhere." And that's when he with it just matches so close the description. Pharaoh probably says, "They're trapped. They don't know
Right.
what they're doing. I'm going after them."
Right, where it says they are bewildered by the land, the wilderness has closed them in.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
That's cool.
And anyway, then they return. God says, "Go back." And that going back probably really convinced them. Oh, they don't have any way to go anywhere here. So they think we're doing it. And they're coming down. And that's when we see this in this narrative that we can pick up from here. So anyway, he's got Migdal here. He's got Pi Hahiroth over here, and then across is this Baal of Zephon, is the islands over here, and that's where they're making the crossing.
That's a cool map.
Yeah, it's really cool. I want to. I've got the site. I want to read this a little bit more because it's very interesting. What I read this afternoon was very, very convincing. And what I like about this guy is his approach. He tells what it was. He says, "All I did was I looked first at the Bible and what the Bible said, not at archaeology or other people experts' opinions." He says, because a lot of it is just it downplays the miraculous. It first of all is choosing this lake crossing because they can't believe that God could part the Red Sea. In fact, they don't believe it. So
I've seen things on the internet that have a map of this, and they have like Google Maps like direction, and they say how long does it take to go from Egypt to Jerusalem? And it takes like, I don't know, 3 days or something like
Yeah,
that.
if you were to go straight in, it probably would, the most it would take you would be 3 days, right?
So then people are saying, how the heck does a 3 day journey take 40 years? But they're not understanding that they were directed by the cloud and the pillar of fire, and that they weren't able to just walk and move and travel by their own accord. They just.
That and the fact that they continued, if you look at this map, immediately after the crossing, they're brought to Mara, which is the testing of the water with the waters, and then they're wandering through the wilderness here until they finally get here where Moses goes up into Sinai. And when he comes back, that's where he finds that they're worshiping the golden calf. That's when the 40 years wandering began. Because God told them at that point, well, no, it wasn't there. It wasn't until he sent the spies into the land. That was the thing that did it. They went around and when he finally sent the spies into the land, they came back and they told some of the spies, told the people, there's giants in the land. And they said, we can't go in. And that's when God said, well, okay, you're not going in then. You don't want to go in? You're all going to die in the wilderness. And so they wandered around here for 40 years until that generation, except for Joshua and Caleb, died off. Anyway, and that's
That's cool. Thank you for sharing that.
I thought that would be interesting to see.
So Pharaoh and his army pursued the Israelites, and God opened and parted the Red Sea for the Israelites. But then when Pharaoh and his army tried to cross through, the waters closed back over them and they were all killed.
Actually, did you notice that it's not like in the movie where they're following after them. It's like they're almost catching up to them and then the waters come in. It says here that at night, this was at night that the crossing was made. And there's this cloud now is at the backside of the Israelite army. And it says God was looking down at them from the cloud and threw them into a panic. And they decided to turn back before the waters came down on them. Read what it says. I'm going to find this part. It says in verse 23, the Egyptians came in pursuit after them into the sea. At the morning watch, the Lord looked down upon the Egyptian army from a pillar of fire and cloud, and threw the Egyptian army into panic. He locked the wheels of their chariots, so they moved forward with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the Israelites, for the Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." So they decided this before the waters. Then God tells Moses, "Hold out your arm," and the waters close over them. So it's amazing thing.
That's cool. Yeah.
So, what? Any other comments we should make on this?
No.
Okay. Let's read the Song of Moses, chapter 15.
All right.
You want to take it, John?
Okay. Then Moses and the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying, "I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him,
Let me
my
stop
salvation."
right there. You know, it's interesting in Hebrew where it says, "He has become my deliverance." That
Yeah.
is literally, "He has become my Yeshua." Isn't that incredible?
Why?
It just is. I mean, it's, I find, I mean, it's not, it's like, I know God deliberately named Jesus Yeshua, but it's just amazing that it was in the Bible
Oh, I see.
2,000 years earlier. The Lord is my strength and might. He has become my Yeshua. Verse ones.
Right, I see.
Yeah.
Because you're saying that's the name that of Jesus.
Yeah.
Right, because on the Bible groups that I follow, lots of people refer to Jesus as Yeshua.
Yeah, because that's the Hebrew name. And it means salvation.
I see. "He is my God, and I will praise him, my father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war, the Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them, they sank to the bottom like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, has dashed the enemies in pieces. And in the greatness of your excellence, you have overthrown those who rose against you. You sent forth your wrath, it consumed them like stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The flood stood upright like a heap, the depths congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, 'I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My desire shall be satisfied on them. I will draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them.' You blew with your wind, the sea covered them. They sank like lead in your mighty waters. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness? Fearful in praises, doing wonders, you stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You in your mercy have led forth the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them in your strength to your holy habitation. The people will hear and be afraid. Sorrow will take hold of the inhabitants of Philistia. Then the chiefs of Edom will be dismayed, the mighty men of Moab. Trembling will take hold of them. All the inhabitants of Canaan will melt away. Fear and dread will fall on them. By the greatness of your arm, they will be as still as a stone. Till your people pass over, O Lord. Till the people pass over whom you have purchased. You will bring them in and plant them. in the mountain of your inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever. For the horses of Pharaoh went with his chariots and his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought back the waters of the sea upon them. But the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. Then Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, "Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea." So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out to the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he cast it into the waters, and the waters were made sweet. Then he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them and said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, so they camped there by the waters.
A lot of I've heard commentators say that that tree that he Moses threw into the water represents the cross.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And that it healed the waters. I thought that was good.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything else.
Okay. Well, let me I'll read chapter 16 then, I guess. We still got lots of time. Setting out from Elim, the whole Israelite community came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month after the departure from the land of Egypt. In the wilderness, the whole Israelite community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, when we ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to starve this whole congregation to death." I'm going to stop there because remember we started this talking about how God said, "You're not, I'm not going to bring you into conflict right away. You need I'm going to lead you around the long way." And they're going through these trials, which really are ways to establish faith, their faith. The first thing, and they just keep doubting God at one time after another. You know, there's this instance with the bitter waters. And actually, there was before that, it was when the Egyptians were pursuing them. They believed they were going to be killed, and they keep saying it'd be better for us to go back to the land of Egypt. We should have never left.
Right.
And then they're complaining because they have no water to drink. God heals the water, and he gives them a promise that he would heal all their diseases if they're obedient to him.
Yeah.
Now, just a few days later, they need water again, and they're complaining again.
Yeah, I remember Pink talking about this passage right here. They say, "Oh, that we had died in the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. We sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full, Pink says, that's an instance of our memory not being necessarily accurate, because he's saying they were slaves. It's very unlikely that they were sitting by pots full of meat and eating bread to the full. So, he says that that's not wasn't even a true statement, but.
Although it may, yeah, I know. We don't know to what extent, how much food they have. It certainly was more than they had right then and there.
Right, but it's not like they were just sitting around relaxing all
Yeah,
day,
no.
food and getting stuffed.
No, I get you. So continue. Or I will continue.
Sure.
Yeah. And the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread for you from the sky, and the people shall go out and gather each day that day's portion, that I may thus test them to see whether they will follow my instructions or not. But on the sixth day, when they apportion what they have brought in, it shall provide to be double, prove to be double the amount they gather each day. So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, by evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out from the land of Egypt. In the morning you shall behold the presence of the Lord, because he has heard your grumblings against the Lord. For who are we that you should grumble against us? Since it is the Lord, Moses continued, who will give you flesh to eat in the evening and bread in the morning to the full, because the Lord has heard the grumblings you utter against him. What is our part? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord. Just look at all the times grumbling is used in this passage over and over again. And that's one of the words Paul uses in 1 Corinthians, where he says, neither murmur ye, and murmur there is like grumbling. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed at the destroyer. So I just then Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole Israelite community, advance towards the Lord, for he has heard you grumbling. And as Aaron spoke to the whole Israelite community, they turned toward the wilderness, and there in a cloud appeared the presence of the Lord. The Lord spoke to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Speak to them and say, by evening you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. And you shall know that I, the Lord, am your God. In the evening, quail appeared and covered the camp. In the morning, there was a fall of dew about the camp. When the fall of dew lifted there over the surface of the wilderness, lay a fine and flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, what is it? But they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, that is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather as much of it as you require to eat. An omer to a person for as many of you as there are. Each of you shall fetch for those in his tent. The Israelites did so, some gathering much, some little. But when they measured it by the omer, he who had gathered much had no excess, and he who had gathered little had no deficiency. They had gathered as much as they needed to eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over until morning. But they paid no attention to Moses. Some of them left of it until morning, and it became infested with maggots and stank. And Moses was angry with them. So they gathered it every morning, each as much as he needed to eat, for when the sun grew hot, it would melt. On the sixth day, they gathered double the amount of food, two omers for each. And when all the chieftains of the community came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord meant. Tomorrow is a day of rest, the holy Sabbath of the Lord. Bake you what you would bake and boil what you would boil, and all that is left put aside to be kept until morning. So they put it aside until morning as Moses had ordered, and it did not turn foul, and there were no maggots in it. Then Moses said, eat it today, for today is the Sabbath of the Lord. You will not find it today on the plain. 6 days you shall gather it, on the seventh day of the Sabbath there will be none. Yet some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they found nothing. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you men refuse to obey my commandments and my teachings? Mark that the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you 2 days' food on the sixth day. Let everyone remain where he is. Let no one leave his place on the seventh day." So the people remained inactive on the seventh day. Just want to comment a little here. This is certainly a real test of not just faith, but of God's provision. What their lack of faith is based around the fact that they don't believe God is going to be able to take care of them
Right.
because they can't understand how it's possible. It's all based on their understanding. We've got to go and gather the food every day, and maybe it won't be here tomorrow, so we better gather extra amount. And God doesn't bless that. It breeds maggots because he told them he would provide it every day and not to worry about it. Then the Sabbath's coming, and they're told to go and gather twice as much. And it says that the chieftains come to Moses and tell him, I think they were concerned. What are the people doing gathering twice as much on Friday? Yeah, today, God said not to do that, but God did tell them to do that on that day.
Yeah.
So, and Moses explains, you're not going to have to go out tomorrow to gather it because now you've got twice as much. But some of the people think, well, let's go out and get some more. And it's not there because God's already made provision for that. That's why he gave them twice as much.
Yeah.
I think it's just, these were great lessons that they were learning. And I think that's the parallel here that we're going through as we live our lives here today and the different things we encounter. It's not, I don't think any of the things are by accident. I think everything we experience is under the direction of God, and it's to bring us into a deeper relationship with him.
Yes.
So that we can grow in faith.
Moses, I mean, not Moses. Pink was saying that the manna is a symbol of the scriptures. In that, well, he's got several points, but I thought that they were really cool.
Okay, sure.
So he's saying that the scriptures are the spiritual manna for our souls, and at every point they manifest their supernatural origin, just like the manna was supernatural. And he goes on to say that, but even I like how he said, like the manna came right to where the people were, right? And he said, so it's with the word of God, it's accessible to all. And so then but you have to go out and it has to be consumed, and you have to either read the scriptures or ignore them. But anyway, I thought it was really cool that he was saying that.
No, but it's God speaks to us through the scriptures daily. In
Yeah.
accord, in proportion to what we need
Yes.
to exercise our faith with, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good point. It's a very good point. So the house of Israel named it manna. It was like coriander seed, white, and it tasted like wafers and honey. Moses said, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Let one omer of it be kept throughout the ages, in order that they may see the bread that I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out from the land of Egypt." And Moses said to Aaron, "Take a jar, put one omer of manna in it, and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout the ages." as the Lord had commanded Moses, Aaron placed it before the pack to be kept. And the Israelites ate manna 40 years until they came to a settled land. They ate manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. The omer is a tenth of an ephah.
Well, maybe we should stop that.
Yeah, maybe at 17. It's short, but I think it's probably the best that we do this one this way. I'm going to stop the recording at this point.